Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Let's turn there once again. We got into this chapter some on Sunday. Worked through the first few verses. We reviewed there for just a few minutes. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. A good name is better than fine perfume, and the day of death better than the day of birth. It is better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting. For death is the destiny of every man. The living should take this to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, because a sad face is good for the heart. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of pleasure. It is better to heed a wise man's rebuke than to listen to the song of fools. Like the crackling of thorns under the pot, so is the laughter of fools. This, too, is meaningless. We've gone through these verses on Sunday, but just to kind of recap and get us back up to speed as we get into our study. Solid counsel is hard to get from in life, from most people in life. And it seems to me that what Solomon is trying to offer here is some solid counsel. We've seen the pessimism, the cynicism even, of the first six chapters as he's looking at life under the sun. But in chapter 7, there seems to be some kind of a change that takes place where he's looking more at life, looking above the sun, looking from God's perspective on some things. He's already introduced us to the futility of life under the sun. And the vanity of that, but now looking above. It's interesting that in the last part here of Ecclesiastes, we already halfway through, we start finding the words wise and wisdom a number of times. It seems to me, even though he still has some cynical comments to make as we go through, he's drawing more conclusions as from this point on, and is talking about some things that's wise, and he's trying to impart that to us, that here are some points of wisdom, here are some things that we need to learn. And we'll see that more as we kind of work our way through. And so in chapter 7, again, it seems as though we start reading short proverbs, so to speak. There are more short statements that are made from which we can hopefully learn and glean some points of wisdom. In the first few verses, the way our workbook is actually laid out, I thought it made an interesting point. Through the first few verses were some seven comparative and better truths. Well, that was an interesting way of kind of putting some things in perspective, such as a good name is better than a good ointment. One translation renders that as a good reputation is more valuable than the most expensive perfume. And we talk some about the importance of just having a good reputation and what that means and the value of that. More interesting was some of our discussion on the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. That seems like kind of a peculiar statement. But we think about some things that Solomon was saying with that. That is true and that really is possible. Though it seems not right, it seems like that isn't normal. Really it is, because death teaches us some things that we need to learn. Death teaches us things that birth does not. Death teaches us what the end result of all of us will be, and it kind of brings us to reality. He follows that up by saying it's better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting. That's another one of those peculiar statements, but it helps us to understand the reality here of life. And that instead of just partying all the time, we need to understand when we go to the funeral home and we see death, it's a very stark reminder to us of who we are. He said, sorrow is better than laughter. In some ways, that's hard to get a hold of. Everyone likes to laugh. But if we went somewhere tonight and we listened to the funniest comic there ever was, when that's all done, it's all done. The laughter is over. I mean, it's fine for a while. And on the other side of it, sometimes pain prepares us, you know, to think about life in the bigger picture of some things. death changes everything, we said, and put some things in perspective. Where we got to in our class Sunday, verses 5 through 7, we started some discussion on that. It's better to listen to the rebuke of a wise man than to listen to the song of fools. Wisdom comes to us in a lot of different ways. And sometimes wisdom is something that we don't want to pay much attention to. If it's coming to us in this way, you know, listen to the rebuke of a wise man than to the song of fools. It's a whole lot easier and more pleasurable to us, perhaps, to listen to something that's pleasant, the song of fools, something that's happy, something that sounds good to the ears. But that may not be what's most needed or most beneficial to us. You know, it's hard for us to help young people understand, because it's been hard for us older folks to understand, the need and the importance sometimes of just pulling up a chair and listening to somebody who's old. Listening to the wisdom that has been gained through the years. It's something that we need to take the time to do. And I think in part that's something that's being said right here. And yet it's still just hard for us to think about that. Verse 6 brought about, we did discuss that some, for as the crackling of thorn bushes under a pot, it meaning something that's just not going to last very long. You know, it's fun to spend some time with someone who can make us laugh, but sometimes we need to spend greater time with someone who will make us think and challenge us. In verse 8, well, let me stop right there for a second. On those points, in those verses we went through, any additional comments that you have on mind that you want to mention? Let's look at verse 8 and kind of move our way forward from there. The end of the matter is better than the beginning. And patience is better than pride. Do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. Do not say, why were the old days better than these? For it is not wise to ask such questions. Let's think about some of that for a moment. The end of the matter is better than the beginning. Let's think for a moment here about what Solomon is trying to get us to understand. What's he telling us here about the end of the matter is better than the beginning? What are some applications we can start to make with that? What do you think?
There's no unknown territory left. I think, you know, I think a lot of times when you don't know what lies ahead, you worry about it and overanalyze it and all kinds of things. And it can be a stressful and fretful.
Okay.
And once it's completed, you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah. Very true. Okay. What else? What a relief. Maybe my phone will quit ringing from people I don't want to talk with. Yeah, very true. The end of the matter is better than the beginning. One other application we might make with that. Wisdom comes with age. As we get older, there's things we can look back even on our lives when we were younger, back in the beginning, and we can think, well, if I had that to do over again. How many of us would say that about a lot of things in life? If I had that to do over again. You know, there's experience that comes with age. And here again, going back to our previous point, it's that perspective that sometimes young people need to consider and to listen to. And maybe it's even from that perspective that Solomon is sharing some things with us here. In fact, I think that is part of the point. I mean, here Solomon, I would presume at this point, is an old man, and he's drawing some of these conclusions now. And now he is in the position of being the one with gray hair, trying to explain some things to those who are younger. Learn from what I've learned. And in some ways, he's even saying, learn from some of the mistakes that I've made. You know, mistakes, it seems, sometimes are the cruelest type of education. But we've all been there and we've all done that. And we've all learned from that. I think what Solomon's in, at least in part, trying to say is, don't make the same mistakes I made. We have likely said that at some point in time to our children, even. We've said, don't make the same mistakes I've made. Don't. I tried this. It doesn't work well. This really hurts. You know, don't do this. We've been there.
A lot of kids today don't listen to adults because they, you know, got all this technology and all. That's like I was telling my kids earlier. In general, kids have not changed since the 1980s or the 1990s. You basically, they have the same temptations, the same problems. You just have different means to get around it. And yes. So really, when mama tells you you shouldn't do something, then you shouldn't.
Kids haven't changed from Solomon's day. You know, I mean, you know, sometimes temptation is delivered in a different mode, but you know what Solomon said over and over: there's nothing new under the sun. You know, it's all different, but it's all the same. The temptations are still the same, just delivered in a different way. Verse 8 again, it says in the latter part, "And patience is better than pride." Another version says, patience of spirit is better than haughtiness of spirit. What application can you make with patience? What would you say? Now, there are several folks here who have age even beyond me that should be able to tell us something about patience.
It's hard to be patient.
It is, but I mean, that's the reality. But here, what is the Lord telling us? I mean, this is Solomon that's moving the pen, but these are the words of the Lord, really. It's what he wanted recorded. I was speaking with someone just today, a close friend, dealing with some very serious issues, you know, in life, challenges in life. And right after I got done talking with them, I came to this passage and got thinking some more about patience. In fact, wrote a few things and sent to them regarding patience. I meant to bring that out to you and I forgot. I was going to share that with you. Just the idea that God wants us to know and to learn something here about patience. Patience is a better way to go. And there's a lot of issues in life that will require of us a tremendous amount of patience. And in our time, which here again I'm not sure is a whole lot different from Solomon's day, I can't help but wonder if Solomon did not struggle with patience as well. We want everything done now, and when there are issues and problems in life, we want them resolved today. And when there are problems at home, problems with our children, problems with our marriage relationship, you know, it's painful to us and we struggle with that and it gets us down and it's very depressing to us. And yet it takes patience to work through those issues, and sometimes those issues are not resolved very quickly. Patience is something that's really hard to get. In fact, I have learned over time, patience is one of the most painful things to try to get a hold of. You know, to try to make a part of your life. And I find it very interesting here that there is a man who has done and tried everything in life and has the means and the ability financially and from a power perspective to command anything done that he wants done. And he's telling us something here about patience, that patience is better than pride. If there was anyone who had the right to, you know, demonstrate pride, he would have been Solomon. That patience is better than pride. Interesting point coming from that man. Your thoughts?
I just think just being patient with someone, I look at myself, I think how patient God is.
Yeah. This is an interesting thought when you put it this way. Sometimes we perhaps we do demonstrate patience in our life. Even to the point that we might even become somewhat, you know, proud of that we've demonstrated patience. And yet every time if I've had those thoughts, if I get my mind where it needs to be and realize something about the patience that God has demonstrated toward me, I have a lot more to learn about patience. Just an interesting thought. What else? Just another hand here, Rick.
Something that occurs to me. A lack of patience sometimes can be indicative of a lack of faith in God.
Could very well be.
We're trying to make something happen. We're trying to force something that shouldn't be forced. If we just sit back and say, God will work this out if I trust in Him. I don't have to get all worked up, whether it's being angry or worried or whatever else it is.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Good thoughts. What else? And think of the other side of this too. We see the benefit, the blessing of patience. What's the second part of the verse? Patience is better than pride. What's the problem? What's the struggle?
I see this tied a little bit to the end of the matter. And through all of these events in life, we learn from those things. Or we're not maturing, just growing older, you know,
sure.
Getting older. And at the end of an event, if we're haughty about our accomplishments, it's a block.
Yeah.
So you'll get any learning,
right?
Any gaining any wisdom or understanding from what you've just gone through.
Right, right.
So that's good. From personal experience.
Yeah, I think we all can. Derek.
Sometimes we're not patient with people because we think everybody else ought to be like us. So that's kind of where the haughtiness comes in.
Yeah, that can be a struggle too. Interesting thoughts. Okay. Developing humility seemingly is something that doesn't just come naturally. If there is some humility coming into the life of Solomon here, it's in the very latter part of his life, though earlier in his life he seemed to be one who was willing to submit to God and obey God and listen to God, but something happened in his life where he became, I think, quite prideful and looked at himself, his own ability, and his own power. It may be perhaps now he's kind of coming around full circle in some of that. Developing humility instead of haughtiness is something that's always going to be a challenge for us. There's a couple points we make with that. We have to guard against anger. Hold your finger here in Ecclesiastes. Go to Proverbs chapter 16. Proverbs 16. Verse 32, it's Solomon again who's the writer, and he says, better a patient man than a warrior, a man who controls his temper than one who takes a city. Well, those are quite extreme contrasts, don't you think? A patient man compared to a warrior, that's sort of like kind of the opposites. A man who controls his temper compared to one who takes a city. Completely different attitudes there, and I think that's the point of what he's saying. It's better to have patience. In the New Testament, Ephesians chapter 4, beginning at verse 26. Ephesians 4, verse 26. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let sun go down on your wrath, nor give place to the devil. We're trying to guard against anger. I mean, anger is going to be something we have to deal with. Anger, in some senses, is not bad. I mean, the text here says, be angry and sin not, you know, is the idea. Sometimes we have to get angry, but how do we deal with that? You know, isn't there a thing? Nor give place to the devil. If Satan's in control of us and we have no control of our anger at all, and that just goes to an extreme, Satan has won on that. That's opposite of what Solomon's trying to tell us right here. Going back to our text again. Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verse 10. Do not say, why were the old days better than these? For it is not wise to ask such a question. I'm not sure. That seems to be somewhat connected to what we were just talking about. Patience is better than pride. Do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. We roll right into this. Do not say, why were the old days better than these? For it is not wise to ask such a question. Where are we going with this? Where's Solomon trying to take us with this?
Don't dwell on the past.
All right. Why would Solomon be? Why would he bring that up?
A lot of things that I've seen in the past and have happened
let it go on.
You've dealt with it.
Let it go on.
Also, I think we find that we have a lack of remembering sometimes. Some of the things, the good old days.
Yeah, the good old days.
Remember certain parts of the good old days. Lose your power for a few hours here now.
Yeah,
that's right. How wonderful it would be back there, but good old days. We might have forgotten the inconveniences of not having a thermostat turned the heat on.
It's like I asked one of my uncles one time, I said, don't you kind of miss the good old days and you want to go back to that? And he said, no, it wasn't so good. I mean, my dad and his people, I mean, they had it hard. I mean, it was rough, you know. And no, I don't want to go back to that, he said. And I tried to understand it.
Whenever I read this passage, I think of the old Carly Simon song, Anticipation. It's,
yeah.
And it said, these are the good old days.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the point is that we're missing out on the present if we're dwelling on the past. And I think that's the thing we need to recognize, that cherish the moment, because you're going to be looking back at these memories of fun.
Very true. Why do you suppose Solomon would say that?
Maybe he was looking back at how foolish he had been as a king and say, man, I wish I was like I was then, you know, better back when I was younger and smarter, we didn't have 700 or how many women in the house.
Well, maybe too, at this point in his life, when he is starting to look at wisdom above the sun, you know, maybe looking back on the accomplishments of the past, really wasn't the good old days. You know, I mean, during the days where he was just trying to test and do everything, that was exciting. That's what he wanted to do. And now he's saying, there's no need to go back to that. Seems to be part of the thought. Any ideas for that?
The children of Israel look back in fondness on Egypt and bondage.
Oh, man,
you know,
yeah.
And you know that's not realistic.
Yeah, yeah.
They cried out when they were there, you know, Lord, get us out of here. And then they get out, oh, we were better off back there.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the most amazing stories to me with the children of Israel. Why they would even think for a half a second that they would be better off if they went back to Egypt. What about Lot's wife looking back? I mean, there was something about Sodom and Gomorrah that she just could not let go of. We can speculate quite a bit on what that might have been, her friends or her family, just whatever there that would cause her to turn and look back. We look back sometimes too. And there's some things we don't need to look back to. We need to be looking forward and moving ahead. And as Rick says, maybe these are the good old days. Think of it that way. As we go on to verse 11, we kind of get into a different section here of the text and make some other points here. Some benefits of wisdom, I think, is a point that could be made. Verse 11, wisdom, like an inheritance, is a good thing and benefits those who see the sun. Wisdom is a shelter, as money is a shelter. But the advantage of knowledge is this, that wisdom preserves the life of its possessor. Well, I've had to read that over several times, you know, to kind of maybe get a bit of a grasp on that. You know, wisdom is sort of the key point right here. Wisdom is like an inheritance. Some versions might say with that, like money that comes from an inheritance. It's a good thing. It benefits those who see the sun. So there's some benefits, right, to wisdom, is his point. But there's some benefits even to an inheritance. That can be a good thing. We've talked about some of the fallacies sometimes. Solomon has, you know, about someone who works real hard for what they have and it winds up going to other people, to their family, and it's just gone. It's gone. But now he makes the point that, well, an inheritance can be a good thing. But wisdom is the imperative here. Wisdom is the real point. Wisdom is like an inheritance. Verse 12. Wisdom is a shelter, as money is a shelter. But the advantage of knowledge is this, that wisdom preserves the life of the possessor. Help me with that. What's he saying? What's the key point? He's making an analogy here, metaphor. What would you say to that?
From my experience, inheritance is in everything.
Okay, what do you mean?
Well, when my father died, he didn't leave things in his will the way we thought he would to his children. We actually got left with less than his wife did at the time. And of course, we were very hurt and all that. Over time, and I lived in Dothan, where they lived in Dothan too, so I got to see it. They squandered away everything my dad had socked away and had paid for. I mean, they re-renovated the house. They bought new cars. Every gadget you could think of, they had. Until a few years ago, when I get a phone call and, you know, she's dead, my dad's wife is dead. And they found a loophole where the house was left solely to her, but now she's dead, it goes back to the will. They're trying to make us pay for their expenses. We didn't have to. And that's when it hit me. An inheritance isn't everything. The best inheritance that I got from my dad and my mother too, because what was left to us was hers too, was the spiritual grounding and everything that I need. Although I'm not perfect at using it, but the lessons I learned,
or
knowing that I was loved and appreciated, and all the hard work they put into raising me, and the few things that I do have, but basically I knew my daddy loved me more than possessions, and the possessions don't matter. The house doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. An inheritance isn't everything, because like Solomon says, it can be squandered.
Well, it's like here he says here with wisdom. I mean, the imperative in these next few verses is going to be whatever else is of some benefit in life. Wisdom is the trump card. Wisdom is what is more important. Wisdom is what's going to be the benefit. Wisdom is a shelter, as money is a shelter. Is money necessary in life? Well, we've all learned that. Can money be a benefit? Yes. Can it be a shelter? Well, to some degree it might be, but not as wisdom can be. And that's his point with that. The advantage of knowledge is this, that wisdom preserves the life of the possessor. It's not money that does that, but wisdom does that. Look at verse 13. Consider what God has done. Who can straighten what he has made crooked? When times are good, be happy. But when times are bad, consider God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, a man cannot discover anything about his future. Perspective here? God's talking about perspective. Wisdom gives some level of protection. We just talked about a moment ago. Wisdom gives some perspective here too. Look at what God has done. Who can straighten what he has made crooked? It's talking about what God has done. We can't change what God has done. Let's put some things in perspective here. When times are good, let's enjoy that. Be happy about that. When times are bad, what are we going to do? Consider God has made one as well as the other. Bad times come from God. God has made both. I'm not saying that I don't think it's the idea that he's bringing bad times, but he has made some things in such a way where there is good and there is bad. When there's good, it's real easy for me, when things are good, to say, what a blessing from God. Easy for me to say that. In long-time perspective, I have learned that some of the most difficult days of my life have been some of the greatest blessings to me. God has made both. And there are some times we have to deal with some very difficult hours in life. Perspective. What God has straightened. Who can straighten what God has made crooked? Let's put some things in perspective. Therefore, a man cannot discover anything about his future. Man, that sounds kind of hopeless. I mean, there's some good things, there's some bad things. We're going to have to deal with both. We don't know what the future is going to be. What are we supposed to do, and what are we supposed to think?
Think about the people in Hawaii have a lava coming towards their houses. It's going really slow, but there is absolutely nothing, you know, 2,000 degrees, anybody can do.
Yeah, stop that thing.
Yeah, get a hose.
What are you going to do with that? I mean, when you think about this, here again, the big picture of this. I mean, what should our perspective be? I mean, there's some things in life. There's just some issues that's going to happen. There are days to be happy, and when times are good, be happy. When times are bad, consider that God has made one as well as the other. What do we need to do when we face good days and we face bad days? Where's our focus? Where's our hope? It has to be in God. Interesting that that Solomon would be saying that. This powerful king who has tried everything and is now making this conclusion that, you know, who can straighten what he has made crooked? The power is in God. Our comfort then has to be in God. God will make things work out for us in a way that has helped. I saw a hand somewhere. Yeah,
if you've ever worked in wood,
That's right. You're right. You're not straighten that out. That's right.
If we have good times, we should enjoy them. It's not bad to have a good time. Mm-hmm. Some people would think that it is. That if you're having too good a time, then maybe you're not living right or something. I don't know. They get upset about having too good a time. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, when you have a bad time, God made that too. So this is an opportunity. And sometimes we have to not get all down and out while woe is me, but say, where is the opportunity here? What lesson can I learn from what is happening to me today?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we've got the right focus on God, we'll find it.
You know, there's almost only so much time we can spend anguishing over bad days. Because bad days will come. And when bad days come, we're going to have to kind of keep moving on and pick up and go on and learn some lessons from that where we can learn some things. As I've been reminded more than once, as Christians, we are the ones who walk by faith and not by sight. And that sometimes there are some problems, there are some issues in life that we deal with that we can't figure out how to fix this and what to do, and we can become quite distraught, at least I can. And we have to learn and understand that we are the ones that walk by faith and not by sight. As long as we have God on our side, there are some things that will work out, and it'll be okay. And sometimes we're slow to learn that lesson, I think, as Solomon has been kind of slow to learn the lesson. We look on at verse 15. In this meaningless life of mine, I have seen both of these, a righteous man perishing in his righteousness, and a wicked man living long in his wickedness. Do not be over-righteous, neither be over-wise. Why destroy yourself? Do not be over-wicked, and do not be a fool. Why die before your time? It is good to grasp the one and not let go of the other. The man who fears God will avoid all extremes. There's part of that I think I understand pretty well. Some of it I don't get at all. I'll deal with the part that I think I understand better right here. Finding some balance in life. You know, Solomon is saying, okay, here's what I've seen. The end result, the meaningless of life, here's what I've seen. How can it be this way? A righteous man perishes in his righteousness, and yet there's a wicked man living long in his wickedness. How can it be that way? What's fair about that? Talked about that before, didn't we? Life's not always fair. But have we seen this in our lives? A righteous man who dies in his wickedness or in his righteousness, and a wicked man who lives long in his wickedness?
Chapter 9, verse 11, time and chance overtake them all.
It absolutely will. That's right. Isn't it weird, though, to think about some, like, you know, righteous people like Abel and Naboth and Job, who it seems faced some great catastrophes or trials in their life. Righteous men. You think about, like, one of the longest living kings during the period of the divided kingdom was Manasseh. Wicked. I mean, it's like he wrote the rule book on wicked. And he served like the longest, maybe the longest of any kings, or one of the longest kings. How can that be? Doesn't that seem like unfair? That just doesn't seem right. I think that's what Solomon's talking about right here. Wisdom gives us the ability to kind of put some things in perspective, get a little bit of balance in life. And to understand there are some things that just are going to work that way sometime. But the conclusion on that in verse 18 was, the man who fears God will escape them all, will not be caught up in any of those extremes, is the idea. Look at verse 19 as we go on. Wisdom makes one wise man more powerful than 10 rulers in a city. There is not a righteous man on earth who does what is right and never sins. Do not pay attention to every word people say, or you may hear your servant cursing you, for you know in your heart that many times you yourself have cursed others. I have an interesting perspective here on wisdom. Just kind of gives a shot at several things. Wisdom makes one wise man more powerful than 10 rulers in a city. Just because someone is a ruler doesn't make them smart. Just because someone's a ruler doesn't mean that they're making good choices or providing good leadership. One man who has wisdom is greater than all, is what he's saying. Goes on to say, there is not a righteous man on earth who does what is right and never sins. Interesting perspective with that. The New Testament would tell us the same thing. For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Solomon has seen some in his time who were righteous men, and yet all have struggled with sin. Solomon would be on the top of that list. Don't pay attention to everything people say, even if they curse you. I mean, have you been told? Maybe we've told our children when they were small, they come home crying because somebody's called them some ugly names. You know, somebody said something mean about them. You can't listen to what everybody says. You know, don't worry about that. They'll get over that. And at the same time, we have to tell our children, well, listen, you can't go talking ugly about them just because they talked ugly about you. And yet we've all fallen into that, right? Hard not to, isn't it? Solomon saw that and saw the fallacy of that. You know, that's not right, that isn't good. Verse 23. All this I tested by wisdom and said, I am determined to be wise, but this was beyond me. Whatever wisdom may be, it is far off and most profound. Who can discover it? So I turned my mind to understand, to investigate and to search out wisdom and the scheme of things, and to understand the stupidity of wickedness and the madness of folly. And I find more bitter than death the woman who is a snare, whose heart is a trap, and whose hands are chains. The man who pleases God will escape her, but the sinner, she will ensnare. Insight. He's providing just some insight. As Solomon says, he wasn't wise enough to know it all. He still didn't know it all. That's why he tested everything. To learn, he gained some wisdom in that. And there are some things that will just escape men's understanding. You know, he turned his mind to understand. He tried to investigate everything that he could, and he still didn't understand everything. It's not our place to know and understand everything. That's God's place to know those things. It's interesting that the fulfillment of Solomon's sexual escapades, we might say, to 700 wives and 300 concubines, it seems still left in a position not knowing what true love was about. He still didn't have a grasp on that. I find more bitter than death the woman who is a snare, whose heart is a trap, whose hands are chains. The man who pleases God will escape her, but the sinner she will ensnare. Kind of makes you wonder what kind of wives he had. And where was he looking for them? There seems as though there wasn't a godly wife among the whole harem that he had. And he felt entrapped or ensnared by each of those. He's a pretty slow learner for someone who's so smart. 700 wives, 300 concubines, and he still didn't find the right one.
Surely there must have been one.
You would think, wouldn't you? But there's no indication there. I mean, isn't that amazing?
Song of Solomon.
Huh?
What about the one of Song of Solomon? Was she his wife?
Don't know. Was it his wife or just one sought after? I don't know. Interesting thought.
We were instructed not to go to get the foreign women, and he did.
You did.
If he was making political treaties by marrying women from foreign countries, and that wasn't what it was all about.
And it would destroy him in time. It would.
See, the point is, you're not going to find true happiness in a person, whether they're a man or a woman, for your fingers.
There will still be challenges. All right. Lord willing, we'll take up right here at the end of chapter 7 and work our way through chapter 8. I think we'll go all the way through chapter 8 on Sunday. So try to read that again and be ready for that. Thank you all for being here tonight.